Grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Gallaudet University is in crisis. Since last Thursday, the world's only university dedicated to the deaf and hard of hearing has been boiling. A protest escalated so far that angry students are blocking the gates of the school, and it's effectively shut down. We plan to talk today with Gallaudet University President I. King Jordan. Amid the controversy, primarily over the choice of his successor, President Jordan decided to cancel and issued this statement last night. "I deeply regret that I'm unable to be on Talk of the Nation tomorrow. However," he wrote, "the current situation on the Gallaudet campus is critical and requires my full attention. I truly look forward to the opportunity to talk about Gallaudet and my long and wonderful relationship with it, and I hope that I'll have the opportunity to do so on the program in the not-too-distant future." Well, we hope so, too. But we still plan to talk about this unique institution today. Gallaudet is more than a school to many of its students and more than a beloved alma mater to its graduates. The passions on all sides of today's protest tell a deeper story. Almost 20 years ago, a civil rights movement swept the campus, and as a direct result, I. King Jordan became the first deaf president and helped to build Gallaudet into a symbol of progress and to an inspiration for deaf people worldwide. Today, we'd like to open a window on that community, get a sense of Gallaudet University's history and legacy, and what makes this school, a relatively small institution of some 1,100 students, such an important place. And, of course, we'll look at the current crisis on campus, too. Today, we want Gallaudet students and alumni, other deaf people, and their family members to be our guests. Call and tell us about the school's meaning and value to the deaf community. We're providing real-time captioning of this program at our website. For more information on the captioning, go to npr.org/deafculture. Deaf culture is all one word. The telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email talk@npr.org. And with me here in the studio is Joseph Shapiro, an NPR reporter who's been covering the deaf community since the protest on the Gallaudet campus in 1988. Joe, nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Neil.
Tell us a little bit about that moment in 1988 that swept the university, the biggest protest until today.
That was an important moment. It was an expression of deaf pride. The issue was pretty clear back then. Shouldn't a school that prides itself on educating deaf students have a president who's deaf? And Gallaudet had never had one before. Students demanded that it was time to have one. They closed down the gates of the university, closed down the university much as we're seeing today. And finally, the Board of Trustees relented and chose I. King Jordan, who was a popular dean. And this became a great moment, a glorious moment in sort of the history of deaf people in this country.
And this debate and this protest today seems to echo a lot of what happened in 1988, yet the issue isn't quite so clear.
No. So in 1988, it was a queer issue. This is not very queer at all, because the Board of Trustees met last spring and they chose a woman to be the next president, a woman named Jane Fernandez, and she is deaf. She's been a longtime administrator at Gallaudet. She's deaf. She was born deaf. She, however, grew up in an oral tradition, learning to read lips and speak. She was 23 when she started to learn sign. She became a scholar of American Sign Language. Some students sort of hold that against her. She had a long history at Gallaudet, and she made decisions that were unpopular. So she came with a lot more baggage, but the issue was not so clear as it was in '88.
Briefly, when you talk to people there, and you have over many years, what do they tell you? Why is Gallaudet so important?
It's a special place because Gallaudet is the center of deaf culture and deaf history. If you grew up in a deaf family, chances are your mother went to Gallaudet, your father went to Gallaudet, probably your mother and father met at Gallaudet. You may wish that someday, you may think that your kids will go to Gallaudet. It's the center of deaf education, but also deaf culture.
Mm-hmm. There are deaf culture is unlike the blind who may go to institutions where they learn how to maneuver around. Deaf people go to school together. And they go to schools around the country, and Gallaudet is sort of the apex of that pyramid, isn't it?
Well, there have been the schools for blind and for deaf people, and actually those schools, the number of them are going down. But there is more of a history in the deaf community, but Gallaudet is a special place where they often come together. People come together because they have this thing in common that they communicate by sign.
Mm-hmm. And briefly, tell us a little bit about the history of the school. You were kind enough to usher me over there earlier today, and I noticed that it was founded in the middle of the Civil War.
Abraham Lincoln wrote the charter, 1864. You saw it's a beautiful campus, old
yes,
buildings
indeed.
On a little hill surrounded and a gated iron gate around the campus. Beautiful campus. But as you said, it started 1864. There were no schools for educating deaf people in this country. If somebody was deaf, they did not get educated. If their family was wealthy, they sent them to Europe. And Thomas Gallaudet decided that he wanted to change that. He actually went to Europe and brought a French educator to this country to start that college.
And how is it funded?
Largely, it gets most of its funding from Congress, unlike other colleges and universities. It gets about 70% of its funding from Congress.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Again, we're hoping that Gallaudet students, Gallaudet alumni, family of deaf people will give us a call and tell us about this institution and why it's so important to their community. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Joanne. Joanne is calling us from Encinitas in California.
Hi, Neil. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a mother of a daughter who's deaf, who's attending Gallaudet. She's a freshman. I'm extremely upset and frustrated about what's going on, trying to stay in touch with my daughter via texting over her sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
She's nervous. She's scared. She feels, and the students feel, that they just don't have equal participation in the selection of this president and in the direction that Gallaudet needs to go. Gallaudet is the mecca of the deaf world. We sent her there. She's adopted from Ethiopia. And we tried to give her the best education we could, and that's why she's at Gallaudet.
Mm-hmm.
And
when did you first find out about Gallaudet, and what kind of a place did it hold for the people who were telling you about it?
I first learned of Gallaudet in 1988 when, living in the United States, when my son was born in 88 and watching on the news the deaf students' protest. We later adopted my daughter in 1990. And all throughout raising her, you meet deaf adults who have at some point, like I said, it's the mecca of the deaf world,
mm-hmm.
have been to Gallaudet, and I had always hoped that she would graduate from high school, which she did, we're very proud to say, but she did not pass the English portion of the California exit exam because it doesn't take into consideration that English is the second language for deaf people. American Sign Language is their primary language.
Hmm. Joanne, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. There are, Joe Shapiro, most of the deaf children in this country are the children of hearing parents. Is that not true?
You know, I'm not sure of the exact figure, but I think that's probably right.
All right. Let's get another caller on the line. We'll turn to Angela. Angela's calling us from Pennsylvania.
Hello. Yes. I happen to be deaf, partially deaf right now, and it's getting it's increasing. It runs in my family, but I'll say this. 10% of the American population is deaf or has some form of deafness. This is not being addressed appropriately. We need to have more Gallaudet. We need to have more communication skills for people who are hearing impaired or deaf, not less. And they should have more Gallaudets around the country, not only teaching sign language or American sign language as a whole, and that should be spread as early as possible to get some of the younger folks. That's my comment.
And Angela, do you sign, and when did you learn?
Well, I don't really sign much. I've been learning sign language. I'm teaching my daughter. We're actually taking courses on it. There's American Sign Language, but there's also a different kind of sign language around the world. I think we need to put this into the schools, and I actually think we need to start having sign language as part of our curriculum, because when you look at 10% of the American population right now, that's deaf. That's how many people? That's about 28 million people right now.
Hmm.
Okay, and deafness is actually on the rise because of, you know, we have all these loud music, these loud speakers and things that people are using, and that actually they're finding genetic causes for deafness. None of this is being addressed appropriately either in the schools or in the universities, including the medical schools. And we really need to have leadership coming from places like Gallaudet. We don't need to have a lot of controversy about Gallaudet. We need more Gallaudets.
Angela, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. Good luck to you. And Jo Shapiro, is she right on that 10% figure?
I don't think it's 10% are deaf. She's talking about people who have hearing loss. So it's not all those people would be people who would use sign language. But sign language is something that more colleges are starting to offer as a language, as something you can take to meet language requirements. There is a growing interest in sign language.
Mm-hmm. And in the idea, Gallaudet University has 1,100 students. It's not a big place at all.
1,200 students plus, by the way, 500 graduate students. So about 1,700. So it's a small place.
Even so, it's not rivaling Ohio State University, which we visited the other day.
Right.
Is there any prospect for more demand for higher education for deaf and hard-of-hearing students?
No, actually, the population of Gallaudet is down from 1988. There are fewer deaf students, deaf people of that age, and also more opportunities for deaf people. They can go now to it's easier to go to a regular university. The Gallaudet student protest in 1988 actually, I think, led to that. It led to the passage of federal disability civil rights law that now makes it very clear that all colleges have a requirement to provide sign language interpreters for any deaf student who wants to go to any college, Ohio State or any other school.
Mm-hmm.
I. King Jordan, by the way, helped push that law. He was a key proponent of it. So there are many opportunities now for deaf people to go, not just to a deaf school like Gallaudet.
And before we get
places.
Flooded with emails from Columbus, we know it's The Ohio State University.
Sorry.
Talking with NPR's Jo Shapiro about Gallaudet University, its role in the deaf community, and the protests that have shut down the school this week. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. If you're expecting to hear I. King Jordan on the program, he canceled due to the protest. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about Gallaudet University. The school holds a special place in the deaf community in the United States and around the world. We had planned to talk with Gallaudet President I. King Jordan this hour, but given the ongoing protest on the campus, he sent his regrets in a statement last night. He said the current situation at Gallaudet requires his full attention and hopes to join us in the future. Instead, we want Gallaudet students and alumni, other deaf people and their family members to be our guests. What's this school's meaning to you and its value to the deaf community? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. We never get on as many calls as we'd like, so today we'll launch a comments page after the program. You can find it at npr.org/deafculture. Deaf Culture is all one word. We'll take your comments until 5 p.m. Eastern Time, so write to us at talk@npr.org. That's the email address. Those of you who are listening to this program who have access to VRS, those of you who are deaf who are getting this relayed to you video, you're welcome to call as well, so we'll be happy to take your calls. Joe Shapiro is with me here in Studio 3A. He's the author of No Pity, People with Disabilities Forging a New Civil Rights Movement. He's covered Gallaudet for nearly two decades, and let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Victor. Victor's calling us from Washington, D.C.
Yes, sir. My name is Victor. My wife and I just moved to Gallaudet University this past weekend, and all this broke out on Wednesday, I believe, yesterday. Last night, you know, we had no food in our refrigerator. We had to negotiate our way out with our vehicle. The protesters told us that we would not be allowed back on campus with our vehicle, telling us we had to, you know, walk back to the campus with our bags. I tried to talk to them. I tried to explain our situation. They didn't want to hear it. Finally, we were forced to call DC police to let us back in. And I totally respect their right to protest. Everyone has that right in the U.S., but holding a university under siege, I have a doctor's appointment tonight. What am I going to do? You know, go to the doctor, come back and call D.C. police again to let me in to where I legally reside.
Hmm. Are you connected with the university now?
Well, no. I mean, I live there. My wife is a student there, and we just moved this weekend. And we've been emailing the administration, and we hope to get some sort of answer as to what we should do. Hmm. I mean, we walk in on campus, and we're scared. I mean, we're literally scared for our safety, and there's a lot of emotion going on, and we want a peaceful resolution, but we want it now.
Victor, thanks very much for the call. Good luck.
Thank you.
And Joe Shapiro, Victor's not alone.
No, he's not, and that shows why this is so painful for people who've watched the Gallaudet, watched that campus for a long time. Because and also why it's so hard for King Jordan and the administration to try to figure this out. Because the students, it's not clear exactly what percentage of the school they represent, the students who are protesting, the students and faculty. It's a place that's very divided right now. And there's a lot of passion, a lot of anger, and a lot of hard feelings. And it's hard to see how it's going to heal easily.
This is supposed to be exam week. And
midterms, yeah.
Some statements were issued last night by the school administration, which suggests that they're taking a harder line.
Yes, they were frustrated. The administration had negotiated with the leader of the student government. They thought they had an agreement to stop the protests this week and allow the classes and exams to continue. And then after they thought they had a signed agreement, it fell apart. They're trying to figure out how to negotiate, how to talk and to them, but it does, and they haven't gotten anywhere. And I think it's because the protesters are firm about one thing. They want Jane Fernandez to not become the new president, and that's something that neither side will budge on.
Let's get another caller in. Betsy. Betsy's with us from Garner, North Carolina.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
My son is deaf. He's 23, and he and his wife are both deaf. They attend another school for the deaf. It's actually located in Rochester, New York. A lot of technically oriented deaf kids go there. It's called NTID, National Technical Institute for the Deaf. It's one of the colleges of Rochester. But the point that I wanted to make was that it's very hard for hearing people to understand how deep this concept of deaf culture is. Many deaf people do not see themselves as a disability group. They see themselves as a language minority, and they have very strong ownership over this culture. It's hard to understand the passion and the extreme need to be recognized as a group and as individuals. And many deaf people feel that their voice is not heard. And so when they do get an opportunity to protest or to make a statement, They often are very passionate about it, and hearing people say, well, why are you going off the deep end like this? They don't understand how often deaf people have not been heard. And it's a difficult situation, but I think it's very hard for hearing people to understand the depth of the passion there.
Joe, we were talking with some students today. You were talking. I was listening. Really, they portrayed this very much still as a civil rights issue.
As a civil rights issue, this is we should be listened to. This is an issue of respect. I guess that's it. And that's what 1988 was about. It was a statement of deaf pride, and Gallaudet was the one place where people did listen to the deaf community. That's the one place where they could be heard. And so part of what's, again, painful about seeing what we've seen this last week is that that these sort of heroes of this deaf civil rights movement, I. King Jordan, really became the symbol. He came to Gallaudet in 1988. He said, famously said, "This proves the fact that I am now president proves that deaf people can do anything but hear," and that really inspired deaf people all over the country to expect more, to feel they could do more, that not feel they had to do traditional jobs, teach other deaf people. Those students at Gallaudet today have much higher expectations because of the sort of civil rights talk that we heard from King Jordan. They feel they can be lawyers. They feel they can be doctors. We talked to a student today who wants to go into the Peace Corps. They don't accept the limits anymore.
Betsy, what's your son studying?
My son is in a program for computer animation, and his wife is in an arts program. They started with technical computer graphics training there, and there are engineers and lots of different technical programs at NTID. It's one of the colleges of the university, so their support comes through that college, but they can take any of the classes at RIT.
Okay, and Betsy, we wish them the best of luck. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you for letting me speak to you.
Sure. Let's go now to Abraham. Abraham is calling from Toledo.
How you doing?
Okay.
I'm actually a child of a deaf family, and my family's been affiliated with Gallaudet since the 60s. I've had a sister graduate there. I've got a couple of nieces and nephews that are currently down there now. And a comment on the 88 thing, when that broke in the news, as soon as it broke, I knew it was a done deal. They were going to get what they want. And your previous caller made a comment about the deaf culture and how strongly they feel about it. And that's where a lot of it resides. Gallaudet is the center of education for the deaf community, but it's also a big contributor to the culture. And more so than any other universities, the students want to have more of an input and direction of where their university is going.
And one of the things, Joe Shapiro, that the students we talked to today were telling us was that the deaf community is a much more inclusive community than we in the hearing world are accustomed to. And they feel that they have a right to have a stronger voice than students generally have in the selection of a school's president.
Right. And to be fair, by the way, to the administration, they did involve students. I believe students were on the selection committee, and they had these open forums where the finalists came. They spoke to the students. The students had a chance to ask questions, and those finalists were judged by how they interacted with those students.
Abraham, you said many of your family members went there. I assume deafness runs in your family.
Yes, it is. It's hereditary. In fact, I'm the only hearing child in my immediate family, and I have some nieces and nephews that are deaf and some that are hearing.
So you grew up bilingual.
Yes, I did. In fact, American Sign Language was my first language. I actually learned to communicate that way first before I actually learned to speak. And I remember as a child spending many a visits down to Gallaudet as my sister and brothers were going there, and now my nieces and nephews are there now, too.
So you have sort of a foot in both camps, if you will.
Oh, most definitely. I've grown up in the deaf culture and, you know, also living in the hearing world, as most people refer to it as. And I do see the conflicts, and to be quite honest with you, there's even been some conflicts between my sister and I with respect to the hearing world versus the deaf world. I've lived on both sides of it, and I can understand both views very clearly.
Right. Abraham, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email. These are email questions from Cesar and Kelsey. First, this is Cesar. I attend Palmer High School in Colorado Springs, Colorado. I was wondering what happened to the Gallaudet population since 1988. Why has it decreased? Is it because of the controversy over the idea of having a hearing president? Could you explain this more? My friend Kelsey has a question also, but let's let Joe Shapiro answer the first one.
All right. Well, the partly actually it was that 1988, there was actually what they call the rubella bulge. So a lot of people who became deaf as a result of their mothers contracting
German measles,
right? So and they became of college age around that time, 1988. So that there were a lot then. And that was the peak of the rubella bulge. In fall of 1988, there were 2,100 students at Gallaudet, and now there's 1,700. It actually went down for a while and has gone up. But part of it is that, there are more options for places to go. It's easier to go to a local university or any other university if you are a deaf person now.
And that seems to address Kelsey's question. She wrote also from Colorado Springs, I'd like to also know why fewer deaf students are going to Gallaudet University. I don't understand why less deaf students want to be involved with deaf culture. Deaf students can go to NID or Gallaudet, but more choose to go to regular colleges and not experience deaf culture. Why is that?
But I think for many people, well, they're trying to balance. They need to be in both worlds. If you're deaf, you want to know your deaf culture. Gallaudet is often the place you go to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
But you also know that eventually you have to probably have to leave that and get into the hearing world. And so often students will today are much more likely to say, I'm going to go for my undergraduate here, and I'm going to the deaf school for my graduate education, or vice versa.
We're talking today with NPR's Joe Shapiro, who's been covering protests at Gallaudet University going back to 1988. We shouldn't suggest that they've been going on constantly since then. There was a big one in 1988. There's another one going on today. We had hoped to speak with I. King Jordan, the president of Gallaudet University, today for an exit interview. Because of the crisis on campus, he declined to leave the situation and come over here to Studio 3A. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on. This is Candace. Candace calling us from New York City.
Yes.
Go ahead, please. Go ahead, Candace.
Hi. I was calling in because I wanted to talk about what Gallaudet has been meant to my family. I adopted a child that I didn't know had a hearing impairment and found out that he had a hearing impairment and didn't know what to do, but called up Gallaudet because I knew it was a university for the deaf, and they reached out to us, a hearing family, and helped us in so many ways. My child went to the parent-infant program there and then to the elementary school, and they got us involved in outreach for physical therapy, found out that my child had cerebral palsy, and they did everything they could to the people there to kind of hold our hands all along the way and to include us in their culture. And I just thought it was just a really beautiful thing how helpful and wonderful the deaf community was in reaching out and letting these hearing parents be a part of that community and including our son in it in every way that they possibly could.
And how's your son doing?
He's doing really well. He has auditory neuropathy, and, you know, we work with that. We still do some sign with him and try to deal with his hearing issues. It's very hard to be a part of, to have a child who has a different first language than you do and to kind of work with that. So, you know, so we struggle, but he's doing fabulously.
And how are you doing on ASL?
Not as good as I would like to be, but you know, fortunately, we have a lot of people in our lives who are good and who try to help us.
Candace, best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's talk now with, this will be Ginny, and Ginny is calling us from Fremont, California.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hello. Yes, I just wanted to let you know that I'm mother of three children at Gallaudet and also an aunt of one niece at Gallaudet University, and I'm concerned about the students' strike at Gallaudet. I really support the students. Their strike is for social justice, and I really cherish, you know, the Gallaudet University. And it's the only liberal arts school for the deaf, and it's well-recognized, you know, nationally, internationally. And myself, I'm from the alumni, too, and there at Gallaudet University. And because of the culture, you know, complete access to communication, you know, in the deaf world, it's all connected. But now I'm looking and said, why? Why is the president at Gallaudet, you know? One moment, let me get clarification. Yes, and his, you know, administrator, you know, why are they letting, you know, the strike to continue to increase? And I want them to stop and listen to the students.
I think we should explain also, that Jenny is speaking to us through an interpreter who we're hearing. She is deaf.
Yes. And let me go ahead and finish explaining. You may go ahead and finish continuing.
Yes, would you please?
Okay. One moment, please. And also myself, I am a deaf mother. Yes, that's correct. And also, for 10 years, I've worked here at the California School for the Deaf in Fremont. And my children and a lot of students from our school and the teachers, they work here, you know, as a family, you know, education coordinator for the School for the Deaf. And my three children and my niece are Gallaudet students today. Currently, they're Gallaudet students, and there's a lot of students from our school that go to Gallaudet University.
Jenny, I'm afraid we're going to have to take a short break. Can I put you on hold and come back to you in 2 minutes?
Oh, yes. Okay.
All right. I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to continue talking with Jenny. Oh, I hit the wrong button and just hung up on Jenny instead of putting her on hold. If she could please call back, we would appreciate it. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. Mr. Clever will be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Universal Pictures, presenting Robin Williams in Man of the Year, from Barry Levinson, director of Good Morning Vietnam and Rain Man, in theaters tomorrow. From Cleveland Clinic, working to provide innovative treatments to help patients worldwide face their conditions with confidence. On the web at clevelandclinic.org. And from the University of Alabama School of Law, in partnership with Skadden Arps, sponsoring the Morris Deese Justice Award at morrisdeeseaward.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Academy for Entrepreneurial Leadership, presenting its annual Request for Proposals for Faculty Fellows in Entrepreneurship, a program providing support for new courses or adaptation of existing courses that incorporate entrepreneurial content. Proposal deadline is November 15th. Applications and information available on the web at ael.uiuc.edu.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Here are the headlines from some of the other stories we're following here today at NPR News. A senior Chinese diplomat met with two top members of President Bush's national security team today. The president wants tough UN sanctions against Beijing's ally, North Korea, for its reported nuclear test. And French lawmakers provided initial approval of a bill today that would make it a crime to deny that the mass killings of Armenians in Turkey during the First World War era amounted to genocide. The issue has infuriated Turks. However, the bill could face an impossible struggle to actually become law in France. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow it's Science Friday, and Ira Flatow will be here to talk about the U.S. population as it nears 300 million. He'll look at what the milestone means for one of our most vital resources, water. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. Today we're wrapping up our conversation about Gallaudet University. We're also going to be talking in a few minutes about a new play in two languages, English and sign, that looks at the deaf history of Martha's Vineyard, an island off the coast of Massachusetts. Still with us is Joe Shapiro, an NPR reporter who's followed the events at Gallaudet University for years. And Joe, we've been getting some emails from listeners curious to see what this protest is about, what the students find wrong, unacceptable, or at least some of the students, about the designated new president of Gallaudet University.
Their objections aren't always clearly defined, but I think part of it is that to be the president of Gallaudet is more than being a college president. You are sort of the president of the deaf world. You're the deaf world's ambassador to the hearing world. You're a symbol of what deaf people see as their own civil rights movement. So a lot of they expect the president of Gallaudet to be someone who's going to inspire, to be a leader, and a lot of these protesters feel that she's not up to that. Mm-hmm. And then there are other objections to her. They feel that she's an experienced administrator, but there are people who have not liked some of the things that she has done as provost at Gallaudet. She also ran the program at Gallaudet where they have a school for every kids from pre-K to high school, and she ran that. She shook things up. She probably made some enemies there. She's not a charmer. She's not real charming. People. Somebody once described it. King Jordan's like Bill Clinton, and she's like Al Gore. Jordan's is very charismatic. She's not one on one. By the way, she's when I've interviewed her, she is very personable. She's bright. She's interesting. Many people who've worked with her closely. She has many defenders, but she's not. She hasn't been able to win over the students. It was interesting. Last May, when the protests broke out, she tried to heal the university, and she sort of bravely, I thought, got up every day in the hall, actually, where the students took over the classroom building this week, and she got up on a stage and she took questions from people. And she took all sorts of questions, hostile questions, nasty questions. She took them all. And she was trying to win them over, and she couldn't. But there's something a little school marmish, I thought, about her, because somebody would ask a question, and they'd want to follow up, and she'd say, no, now, look, see, there's that long line. All those other people want to ask questions, go to the end of the line and let them go. So sometimes people say, oh, she's paternalistic, and there's a little bit of that
An issue that deaf people are sensitive to.
They are sensitive to. And also, by the way, as provost, she had to discipline students, and there's some hurt feelings about some of that discipline. Hmm.
Despite my best efforts, we are able to get Ginny back on the phone. I apologize earlier for hitting the wrong button, hanging up on you. We appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to call back.
Okay, yes, hello again. This is Jenny here.
Hi.
I just wanted to answer your question before the advertisement. I just wanted to let you know why the students are protesting and why it continues to get stronger and stronger is because of the students are wanting to send a clear message to the Gallaudet president and also to the administrator that they're not accepting process. They do not accept it, and they're wanting to meet with the two demands, have the two demands met. They have not listened yet, and I'm really wanting to see the Board of Trustees to take over it and control the situation and to set up a meeting with the students and to listen and to take action.
Let me just interrupt to ask Joe Shapiro, the two demands, what are those?
Well, it's that Jane Fernandez not become president and that the Board of Trustees reopen the search. So the Board of Trustees has listened. King Jordan has listened. But if listening is accepting those demands, then they're saying, look, this is what we can't do. The Board of Trustees, by the way, this was kicked off. The current protest was kicked off because the Board of Trustees came back to town last week. And so the students protested to get their attention, and they did. The Board of Trustees, the administration at Gallaudet has been talking to the students, but the one thing they say they won't do is tell Jane Fernandez that she can't be president, and the Board of Trustees has very firmly said, we're not going to reopen the process. That's why we're at loggerhead.
Jenny, I did want to ask you, parents like yourself, obviously there is an enormously larger deaf culture outside Gallaudet that feels very strongly about Gallaudet, alumna like you. You're supporting the students, and are you helping them in this crisis?
Yes. The alumni and also the parents here, we are all sending the message, you know, of our strong support and our agreement, yes, with the students, definitely. And, you know, we feel that, you know, the election of Jane Fernandez, that it's not reasonable, you know, and it's not a good match for our Gallaudet leader.
Mm.
And we also sent a letter to a variety of people, including and also sending funding to the students to help them to continue on with the strike, because the demands haven't been met, and we are still in agreement with the students on their strike over, you know, we feel that it's a wrong election process.
Jenny, thank you very much. And again, I apologize for hitting the wrong button and hanging up on you earlier. Thanks very much for getting back to us, and we appreciate the call. That was an interpreter speaking for Jenny, who is deaf. And here's an email. From Laura. I'm a student at Gallaudet living off campus and unable to get on campus. I've just received word that JF is now at the front gate addressing the students. That would be Jane Fernandez. So maybe we'll hear more about that later today on NPR News. We do have a reporter over there. So
right. And Jane Fernandez, they've walked down the university. She's been unable to get onto campus. King Jordan, the president, the president has a president's mansion on the campus, so he is there with the students, but other administrators, teachers have not been able to get onto campus in the last 2 days.
And again, if you tuned in hoping to hear King Jordan today, he was unable to make it to the studio to do the interview because of the crisis, which he felt he needed to devote his full attention to. We hope to have him on sometime in the future after this is all resolved. Joe Shapiro, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Joe Shapiro, an NPR reporter who's been covering the deaf community since 1988. In just a moment, we'll be talking about a new play about the deaf history of Martha's Vineyard. In the history of deaf culture, Martha's Vineyard holds a special place. For more than 200 years, the island was home to one of the largest deaf communities in the country. But islanders never treated deafness as a disability. Instead, they created a sign language that everyone used, hearing and deaf. A new play in development at the Martha's Vineyard Playhouse explores this era. This island alone recreates the harmony between the hearing and the deaf that used to exist and the discord that ensues when the mainland intruded. For more, we go now to the co-writers, Adrian Blue and Catherine Rush. Adrian Blue is deaf and will communicate with us through an interpreter, Alec Lev. And welcome to you all.
Thank you.
How you doing?
And let me ask Adrian Blue to begin with. The time you're writing about, almost a large percentage of the people on Martha's Vineyard were fluent in two languages?
They used sign language and they spoke at the same time. It's a question of the word fluent, but they were comfortable in both languages, communicating in both languages. They had a healthy attitude towards the entire situation. There was nothing there other than perhaps a linguistic barrier which was broken through.
Reading a little bit about it today, kids used to use sign behind their teacher's back. It was pretty universal language.
Well, yeah, I mean, but just like hearing kids writing notes back and forth to each other behind the teacher's back, it's the same thing.
Sure. Now, your play takes place at the general store. Why there?
The general store was the place where the community met to talk and obviously to shop, but they got together and talked about the day and things that were happening and who'd moved in and who've moved out. So it's a very good place to set a play because a lot can happen.
And the synopsis that I've read of your play suggests that a great deal of tension was inspired by a single question. What was it and who asked it?
The question was asked, and we don't know exactly when the question was asked, but from oral histories we know that an off-island newcomer came to a town meeting and, before a vote was taken, asked if deaf-mutes were allowed to vote. Deaf-mute was the term at the time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't politically incorrect, but asked if they were allowed to vote, and it caused quite a ruckus. The oral history, 50 years later, people were still angry about it.
Now, this the sign language that was used at the time, it is not the American Sign Language that we're familiar with today.
Exactly. It's not American Sign Language. However, it's kind of a blending of sign language and their own local signs. They might have some signs that were sort of homemade that became part of the language. Now, those home signs are gone. We don't have those anymore.
Could you describe those for us?
Okay, well, there are older signs. You would make a handshape, let's say one that looked like what you'd use for a telephone, what mm-hmm. people typically use to describe a telephone. You'd have that sort of thing, but remember, in the old days, you have a different kind of telephone, right? You have one piece that's held up to your ear and one microphone that's held up to your mouth. So the sign would become... Imagine doing that. Imagine holding an old-time telephone up to your ear and mouth. That's one example.
We're talking with playwrights Adrian Blue and Catherine Rush about a new play that they're developing in Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, about that island's deaf history. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And we break away now from Talk of the Nation, a special edition today of Talk of the Nation. You're tuned to WILL AM 580. We're also online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 1:53 Central Time. We're going to check in now with Todd Gleason to find out what happened today in the end on the Chicago Board of Trade, and also he'll have some information about Kansas prices as well. Todd?
You bet. Thanks much, Celeste. Taking a look at the numbers after the release of the USDA crop production and WASDE reports this morning. We'll take those up in completion this afternoon during the closing market report. It's 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock, and Dan Zwicker and Bill Mayer are going to join us for the whole half hour this afternoon. We're going to take these reports up and talk about some really serious numbers that have been happening at the Chicago Board of Trade. Dave Dickey reminding me that wheat had made contract highs this week, 4 days in a row, and up it went again today, but she did settle lower in Chicago, down 15.5 cents in nearby December, a 550 high, the low at $5.11, settlement price at 515.5, down 15.5 for the day. The March futures were off 19.5 at 525, their high 560, the low at 521. And the May contract to 532 high, low at 503, settlement price at 509, down 19.5 cents. July contract to 455.5 high, low at 442. Their settlement price at 446. They were up 2 cents, and September's were 2.5 higher, 459 on the high, the low at 450. Settlement price at 451.5. They were up 2.5 in Kansas City, by the way.